LaBelle. Rose up the middle. Looking, cutting, shooting, go! LaBelle, 2-0 U.S.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello, Graham.
Hello, Terry. Yes, we're back for a summer special, back for our Women's World Cup preview podcast. Yes, it doesn't seem like 4 years since we were here last previewing a World Cup, or 4 years before that either. But yeah, back in 2015, we did our first Women's World Cup preview, and to be fair, Terry, we were pretty much walking around in the dark, weren't we?
Stumbling, I'd say.
Yes.
You know, I don't remember. I don't remember us doing that preview.
Well, actually, I think you do, because if you remember, I did a bit of investigative journalism for that one. Because do you remember? It was when Nike started this whole thing about the plastic pitches in Canada.
That's why I don't remember it, Graham, because I contributed nothing. Yeah, but yes, now I remember that well. And I remember that was some fine work that you did. Yes, the plastic pitches and Nike and all of that and the connection therein. Nike, of course, being very much on the periphery of FIFA events, as much as they don't like to admit it. So, yeah, that was good stuff. And I do remember the 2019 one because we got Patty in.
Yes.
Got an expert in.
We did get an expert in, yes. That certainly helped up. But I think now we can do this on our own. We watch enough women's football now to be able to have our own opinions, or at least be able to say we come at this because we've actually watched the game rather than just someone who's just been trawling through Wikipedia for the last couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, and on a completely different topic, my preview of the Women's World Cup is now available on the Sound of Football blog. All organic knowledge, no research whatsoever. All plucked out of my brain.
And listeners, of course, if you do read Terry's blog, then you'll get a little leg up when you do our quiz, which, of course, now has become a staple of the Sound of Football now. We do quizzes, yeah, about one every 6 months or so, but we do quizzes now.
And it's a wonderful quiz too, it is, listeners. Shall I tell you what my score was, Graham?
Go on then, tell me what your score was.
I got 32 out of 32.
Did you?
Yes.
Eventually?
Eventually. My first try, I got 3.
Yeah. To be fair, it is fiendishly difficult.
It's very difficult. But in fairness, and I don't know, I mean, I don't want to speak on your behalf because you made it, but it occurs to me, particularly in your introduction, that you know, you're encouraged, actually, to be fairness, to Google it, to research. It's a learning tool rather than necessarily a quiz. I mean, if you know all of that, then put yourself forward and volunteer to be our podcast for women's football, because that's impressive. But seriously, you know, it's a learning and growth experience, that quiz. It's an opportunity to go, oh, I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to look it up and then find out. And then you get a flush of satisfaction. I mean, in fairness, I got to about the last 4 or 5 and I thought, I think I can figure this part out.
Yeah.
Because there were some questions that I thought, I don't know the answer to that, but I think I know the answer to that. I need fewer options.
Yes.
So I sort of researched the tougher ones, but the ones that I think I might have known the answer to, I waited to, and then was rewarded by going, oh, I knew that. Fantastic. So, yeah, it's fiendishly difficult and a lot of fun, and it'll take half an hour of your time. So, yeah, get stuck into that, listeners.
Yes.
Loads of fun to be had there.
Yes, listeners, if you want to do that, get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the blog, and you will be able to find it along with Terry's piece, which, well, it's a preview of sorts, isn't it? It's really who's going to stop the USA, isn't it?
That's the name of the article, yeah. Anyone stop the US? And that's what it tries to address. And I guess that's going to be one of the topics of this podcast is, can they be stopped? And who can stop them if they can be stopped?
Well, let's talk about them then, because they are four times World Cup winners. They've won the last two tournaments, and they come in here maybe not having it all their own way in recent games against big opposition, but they won the She Believes without losing a game. So they are coming into it in good form. Yes, the players from the last World Cup are 4 years older. That's the way World Cups work. But similar things were said about them in the run-up to the previous two World Cups, that they were perhaps an ageing side, that they didn't have enough talent coming through that would replace those players. Would the older players have that much of an impact on the side? But every time, they just seem to turn up for the tournaments and push through. And it wouldn't surprise me if they do exactly the same this time as well, being on the easier half of the draw, so to speak.
So to speak, what we have to consider about the US is that, you know, they've had a professional league for a good while now,
yeah,
longer than most. The recent history of women's soccer and women's soccer players, you know, they have gone through a great deal of hardship, and it's been difficult for them to get to that professional level, but they have made it. And I think that it's made them extremely hungry for success. I would also suggest that because they've been professional for such a long time, they're going to be in good shape. And arguably, even though when you've got players who are over 30, I mean, I'm thinking Alex Morgan, obviously Megan Rapinoe, who's retiring, Crystal Dunn, who are over 30, I would still argue that as professional athletes, they're probably in pretty decent shape, bearing in mind that some of the opposition are likely to be part-timers, not necessarily professionals. So the real test will be, you know, when they come against the established or the emerging teams. So Canada's an obvious example, if they meet them, and obviously the European teams as well, the emerging European teams who are now fully professionalized and proper good. So I don't think that it's going to be age that's necessarily going to be the issue with the US. They had that three-game snap towards the back end of last year where they lost to England, they lost to Germany and Spain, all very, very good sides. And I think that it's right that people should look at that and think, well, does that mean that they don't necessarily have the quality to play against the top sides in this tournament? It doesn't necessarily mean that, but it does make the tournament a little bit more interesting and make us think that perhaps that there's a possibility of a different team winning this World Cup, which is intriguing and exciting in of itself. But I mean, for myself, I would still put the US as favourites. I'd be happy if I drew them in the sweepstake.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, as I mentioned, the draw is split into two. So unlike the last World Cup, where everyone had a chance of playing everyone up until the final, that was, because this World Cup is being hosted in two countries, Australia and New Zealand, it's split in two, very much like the Men's World Cup in South Korea and Japan was. So you could play a team in the group stage and then play them again in the semi-finals. So there is an Australia half of the draw and there's the New Zealand half of the draw. Now, in the New Zealand half of the draw, you've got the USA, you've got obviously got the host, New Zealand. But really, after that, you've got the Netherlands, the European champions from 2017, they're in there in the same group as the United States. You've also got Sweden, the current world number twos. They have got to be the big teams in that half of the draw. But in the Australian half of the draw, you seem to have all of the big teams. You've got England, you've got Germany, you've got Australia, you've got Canada. Australia and Canada in the same group even. So England, if they are to progress in this tournament, have got a bit of a tough route, haven't they, Terry?
Yeah, and I think with the injuries that England have had, Beth Mead gone, Leah Williamson gone, that's putting additional pressure on England. I'm also concerned about that loss to Australia a few months ago as well.
Yeah.
That concerns me, and I'm just a little bit pessimistic about whether or not England, given the toughness of their side, and also the additional motivation from other teams as well. I mean, I mentioned in the preview that if they meet Germany, for example, and if everything goes according to plan, they will meet Germany, then I think that's going to be a really, really difficult hurdle for them to overcome. I think the Germans are going to be highly motivated to, I think, right some perceived wrongs from their part from what happened in the final. So if England make it to the final, then they certainly will have earned it. And obviously you can say that about any of those teams in that bracket, if we can call it that.
I know the England results certainly went down very, very well in Australia, gave them a lot of hope and a lot of optimism. And from what I've heard and read about it from Australian interests, it's the game that they point back and say, this is a pointer to say that we're going to do well in this tournament. That game played at Brentford, I think it was, and it was played in awful conditions. But I wonder if England just didn't go into that with the same mindset as Australia did. Australia went absolutely at them. It reminded me a little bit of the game that Australia played against Team GB in the Olympics when both teams were going for it, but Australia just had the extra edge. I think this time, I don't think England were not in any way up for it as Australia were. This was their biggest game, I think, before the World Cup, and they needed to make a statement. And they certainly did. They certainly played much better than England did on the night. In a little way, it was a bit like that England-USA game that we played at the end of last year. That was a bruising encounter. But I think England came into that game in exactly the same way as Australia came into the game against England. England were tough for that game. They really did boss the USA. One of the defenders even lost a tooth for the USA. It was not a friendly in any respect. And I think perhaps England got more out of that and, again, probably thought more about where they were in the world because of the result against the USA. And I think it showed up against Australia that maybe they're not where they think they are. I think as well, coming into the end of last season, I think because of there were so many high-profile injuries, for one thing, you're missing all those players. But another thing, I don't think players were perhaps putting as much in as they needed to. They breezed through their qualification, scoring 80 goals and conceding none, which is utterly ridiculous. And, we can talk about the whys and wherefore of a UEFA qualifications another time. I don't think we should get bogged down in that. But I think, as far as England was concerned, this could be the first time that we've seen the club v country pull happening for an England side, where the WSL was so well contested at the end of last season that I don't think any of the players who were obviously, or most of them play for those top four sides, I don't think any of them really wanted to have another bruising encounter playing for England in a game that effectively meant nothing when they would have a very important WSL games were coming up and potential Champions League qualification and title-winning matches were coming up. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think that game against Australia, yes, it was concerning because Australia looked really strong, but I think England could play better. And I think we could see that with the other friendlies as well that we played. The game against Portugal, there was a goalless draw against Canada just the other day behind closed doors as well. So I'm not sure if we should really read too much into those. I think you're going to see a very different England when the games start next week. And I'm just really looking forward to it. I think England's group is comfortable. I know China are strong, but yeah.
So China are strong. They're the Asian champions and they're getting stronger. I mean, I think they're recovering from what has been a fairly historic dip after having been, you know, very strong in recent years. England's advantage, of course, is that their first game is against Haiti.
Yeah.
So really, by rights, you know, that should be a comfortable win and maybe with some goal difference as well, that will then put them into, you know, what will be tougher games. Particularly Denmark are, I would suggest, not contenders, but they'll be tough. And China as well won't be contenders, but they'll be tough. And with two teams qualifying, you'd be really surprised if England didn't make it through to the next round out of that lot. But it does go to demonstrate, although it's an expanded tournament, I think that there's, you know, concerns about the amount that it's expanded. You know, if you look at Group D, leaving out Haiti, you know, that's, they're three good sides there. I mean, I think markedly you could tell which is the better of the three, but you know, they're all good. I mean, there's no walkover in that group, perhaps with the exception of Haiti, but we'll see.
Haiti are a bit of an unknown quantity, really, but you would say that they're not going to present that much of an opposition to professional players. Yeah, Denmark have got a couple of the best players around. You've got to look at like Pernille Harder. She was one of the best players in the WSL over the last couple of seasons. We'll be playing for Bayern Munich next season. But as Norway showed in the Euros, you can have all the talent up front, And if you haven't got it at the back, then it's not worth it at all. So I'm going to go out there. I'm not expecting Denmark to do much in this group. I think it's England and China going through. But finishing top could be important when we consider who England have got to play from Group B, which, of course, on paper, looks like it's going to be Australia and Canada.
You can comfortably see any team getting knocked out against either of those two teams. But equally, you know, England, for example, would, I think, probably should go into their feeling. Well, England should feel comfortable playing anyone, frankly. They're the European champions, and they've got some of the best players on the planet. So let's not be too immodest and too downbeat about England's chances. Obviously, Australia have got Sam Kerr, and they're not a one-woman team, but, I mean, she is in such rich form that if she starts off okay, then I think they're going to be quite difficult to stop. But they are stoppable. Canada, by rights, really should be truly feared, but their record in the World Cup's not been great. And so if that continues, then again, I mean, there's excellent chances for England to progress beyond those two. But my goodness me, I mean, like, you know, that tie is almost unworthy of a second round fixture, isn't it? You would feel that wouldn't be out of place at quarter or semi-final, wouldn't it? And again, speaks to, you know, just, you know, how deep the quality is these days.
Canada should feel buoyed by the fact that they are Olympic champions, and the Olympics for women's football is a full tournament. It's not an under 23 with overage players. It is a full tournament, but it's only 12 teams. So it's a very short format tournament. You make a mistake, you go out, one or two lucky results, and you'll win a gold medal. I'm not saying it was a lucky result, but it's not as difficult to win the Olympics as it would be to win this World Cup. And this World Cup can be very difficult to win for even the best teams there. So I think Australia, being a host nation, it could easily be as much of a millstone as it could be something that helps them through. I think the atmosphere for that Republic of Ireland game in Sydney is going to be amazing. If you're lucky enough to be there, that is going to be absolutely cracking. And that's a good time for us in the UK as well. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. So not a terrible time. Of course, it is work time. And, you know, we'll have to just glance at it occasionally while we're busy with doing our work, won't we?
Yes. Yes, we will.
Just occasionally.
Just occasionally. Yes. Yeah. While we're working.
A word about the Republic. I'm an Arsenal fan and I love Katie McCabe. I think she's brilliant. But they're here for the ride, aren't they, really? They're just here to have fun and enjoy themselves. And
No. I mean, they're a thoroughly professional outfit, and they've got some players. Their biggest concern is Denise O'Sullivan, of course, who got injured during that warm-up game against Colombia, where players ended up walking off because they just were not happy with the way that Colombia were prosecuting that particular match. And I don't know. I mean, last I saw, her boot was off and she's training again. So fingers crossed she'll be fit for that game. But that must have been a big scare. I don't expect Republic of Ireland to qualify. Either one of the two favourites is going to have to blow up. I think it's also worth bearing in mind that Nigeria have pedigree in this competition. And again, you know, no one should be at all surprised if one of the two favourites blows up, that any of those two could nip in there. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly a degree of happy to be here for the Republic of Ireland. But I mean, it's not, I mean, their coach is, you know, a veteran NWSL coach and, you know, not accustomed to losing football matches. So I'd be really surprised if they were anything other than super competitive in their games.
Yeah, Nigeria never not qualified for the World Cup. So they've been here lots of times. So they have plenty of experience. I think it's a fascinating group, and I think anyone who comes through it, but even though it is likely to be Australia and Canada to come through that group, it's going to be really tough for England to get to the quarterfinal. At the last few tournaments, a quarterfinal has been a minimum requirement for England. They've almost been in this weird situation where if they don't get to the quarterfinal, it's an utter failure. And if they got to the semi-final, it was a huge achievement. That's where England were. And now they've taken that step ahead now. Two semi-finals in a row in the World Cup. But I think getting to the final this time, I think, is going to be very, very difficult indeed. So let's have a look at some other teams then. Let's have a look at Germany. You wrote in your preview there, Terry, about how they need a bit of luck. But the same could be said for any team in a tournament, isn't it, really? I mean, any tournament winning side has to have their luck at some point, don't they?
Yeah, but I think Germany are due some luck. I think that they were unlucky in the Euro. I think it was extremely unfortunate that Alexandra popped just before the Euro final. And she's obviously fit and raring to go. She's had so many injuries over her career and missed tournaments. Just feels to me as though the stars might be aligning for Germany. There's an injury doubt over Lena Oberdorf, which would be a problem. I think she might be not playing in the Morocco game, but should be back in time for their second fixture. So fingers crossed for that. But for me, it feels like this could be Germany's year, or at least this could be Germany who are best equipped to take on the US. And that's not just my, you know, my German bias. I do sincerely feel that that's the case for them. I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on, you know, against Morocco, and it will be their opportunity to make a statement.
Well, yeah, but the one thing I'm looking at down on their fixtures is that second game against Colombia, when really I think you want that to be the last game of your group so you can try out a few of your squad members. I don't think they want to be playing Alex Pop in that game, do they?
It would be nice maybe if they could do that, but they won't be able to. I mean, but the thing is, I think also Colombia have kind of like got their cards marked now.
Yeah.
People are going to be watching them. It's possible, and we have not seen that much footage from that game against Ireland because it didn't get uploaded to the FIFA's website afterwards, but some footage has emerged. So it's possible that maybe, you know, the Irish players and the coach overreacted. But, you know, if not, then, you know, I think everyone will be looking at them and saying, look, you watch it. And that's including the referees who will be keeping an eye out for them. And that's always the problem, isn't it? When you go too hard in warm-up games, you get a reputation before anyone's kicked a ball. You know, Colombia will be tough opponents, no doubt about that, because, you know, you'd expect them to be. But after that, yeah, they'll be definitely keeping their eye out for it. That's a cracking group. I don't know too much about Morocco. I know they've got, like a lot of nations, they've relied quite heavily on their diaspora, but these are all developed football nations, and it's really exciting to see how well they do. But I would still imagine that Germany would finish top of that group, I would think. I mean, maybe that's my European bias speaking, but that's one of the joys about this World Cup and about Women's World Cup, is that you know so little about the other teams and their players. This is the only opportunity you get to know them, unlike the Men's World Cup, which is sort of like, you know,
yeah,
you're going to know them all by now.
No, exactly. I was thinking that just the other day. I was just thinking about this is a bit more like World Cups used to be for us,
yes,
where you finally see players that you hadn't seen for 4 years. Of course, Germany may say, well, yeah, that game against Zambia, you can write that off for the same reason that England can write off their poor performances coming into this, you know, not wanting to like push too hard just before the start of a tournament. But they did get beaten by Zambia just about a month before coming into this tournament.
But Zambia are good, though.
Well,
I mean, maybe not
Barbara
good
Bander's
enough
good
to win something, but they're good. And they've, yeah, I mean, right, okay, well, one player is good. But yeah, you know, I'd say that was...
Yeah, they've got a good player. I mean, they had a couple of very high-profile results in the Olympics where Barbara Bander scored two hat-tricks, but they scored two hat-tricks in games they lost. They conceded 10 goals against the Netherlands, and they conceded 5 against China.
Details, Graham. Just
details, of course. But this is what I wanted to try and get onto. You have mentioned about the fact this is an expanded tournament. It's now 32 teams. Last World Cup was 24. That was only the second one at 24. 2011, it was still 16 teams. Now, of course, the game is expanding and it's moving on at pace, especially here. It's difficult sometimes because we can get carried away with thinking that the game is exploding at the same pace around the world. Last World Cup, there was a 13-0. And of course, everyone starts saying, starts moaning about how the quality is diluted because you've got weaker teams in there. You've got 8 more teams arriving this time. Are we going to see double-figure scores anywhere? And if so, will that be to the detriment of the tournament? Is that going to be too much too soon?
I think it's very likely that you'll see a couple of blowouts. Yeah, totally. I mean, I certainly think US v Vietnam has got blowout potential. One, because of the gap in quality of the rankings between those two teams, but also because the US just don't have any... They don't invoke the mercy rule in World Cups, and they shouldn't. They shouldn't either, frankly, because sometimes things can go down to goal difference. And so you've got to. I mean, if they're going to blow them out, then others might too. And I think that that's reasonable. As to the broader point, it is a difficult one to answer because what you do want to see smaller nations or nations that have less developed women's programs do well and come on. And the best way of doing that is to get them into the World Cups, not so that they can get a hiding, but so that they can presumably make some of the money that comes from being in the World Cup so that it can then be fed back into their federation, that they could then use it. That presupposes that those federations are competent enough to be able to do that, but there's only so far that you can go. It's sensible, I think, to try and get as much money coming into development for the, I will call them smaller nations, although in some cases they're actually very large nations. But I mean small in terms of their development of the women's game. If you were to take a step back and make this more about how do you develop the women's game, then obviously money is a big driver for this. But also then there probably needs to be much, much broader, more comprehensive strategies in order to do that. But, you know, this is football, this is FIFA. You know, I mean, some federations are run better than others. That's not always easy to do. In the absence of that, then, yeah, I mean, getting into and qualifying for World Cups, you know, it makes a degree of sense. I think we will have a few blowout games, but not that many. I look at some of these groups and think, okay, on paper, they look actually pretty well matched. They look like they could give you a game. I look at teams like Vietnam. I look at Haiti. I wonder about Philippines as well, who have, they've got a lot of US-based players who will certainly know how to play football, but it's the development time. It's the time they have together is the issue. So some of them, like, yeah, they might not be, there might be some teams there where they just don't have very good players. I think what's more likely is the issue is they just haven't had that much time together and game time together to be able to develop and work on their processes, particularly defensively. I think that's the problem and that's the issue. Is that a reason for having, say, a smaller tournament? I don't know. We do know that the 32-team format does, we're comfortable with it. We watched the Men's World Cup, and I think that it was a successful World Cup, if I remember rightly, from that point of view. So I think it's better than having a 2014 tournament, which, as we know, can be problematic.
Yeah, I mean, it can make the group stage a bit laughable with teams going through without winning a game and such like. I really like the 32-team tournament. I think it really does have interest all the way through. But the one problem is, of course, is that it restricts your options when it comes round to who's going to host it, because it's now so big that it's difficult for even two countries to host it. So that could be a problem, especially if it expands financially as we go on. There isn't yet a host for the next World Cup, but you would imagine that while the bigger nations in Western Europe are probably saying, yeah, come on over here, there's not that much investment to allow a 32-team tournament in some other parts of the world, especially not if they want to spread it across the country where they may not have enough FIFA-graded stadiums to take it on.
Well, they'll benefit somewhat from the fact that the women's game probably still in parts of the world isn't as big a draw in terms of ticket sales than the men's, which means that they will be able to host some of these games in smaller stadiums, assuming that they are FIFA compliant, which, of course, that doesn't always necessarily mean the same thing. That's a fairly negative reason for overcoming that issue. And the plan is that the women's game becomes super popular. Obviously, you do need massive stadiums. So as things stand at the moment, there's four bids. There's Mexico and the United States, which is interesting because obviously they will have just finished hosting the Men's World Cup the year before. So they'll be in a good place to be able to host a 32-team football tournament, no problem. Brazil are in as well. I don't imagine that they would have any difficulty. Massive country, lots of football stadiums. South Africa is an interesting choice, and it will be very interesting to see whether or not the World Cup returns to South Africa. And over here in Europe, and my personal preference, Belgium, Germany, and the Netherlands are putting a joint, which I think would be super cool. That would be amazing for us. Yes. That would be great because we could just get in our cars and go across the channel to watch the game. That would be almost like having a home tournament. Interestingly enough, though, Graham, nothing from the Middle East.
No.
Which, I mean, given that, you know, the Middle East countries are trying to horn in on almost every major sporting event, it's a kind of surprising that they've not gone in.
Well,
but only kind of.
Only kind of, yes. Well, yeah, considering how FIFA are cozying up to Saudi and Qatar, that, and obviously Saudi and Qatar don't really have much interest in women doing anything, let alone playing football. So FIFA are putting so much work in trying to siphon out money out of these petrol-rich states, and yet the women's game isn't really going to benefit from that. So do we really want it to go to Qatar?
No.
No, of course
not. No,
we don't.
No. No, obviously not. No. No. Or Saudi Arabia for that. But I don't think we want the Men's World Cup to be going to those countries, to be honest with you. But certainly not the women's. It would be the most cynical example of sports washing were that to happen. So, I mean, even to the point where even FIFA might go, we can't go that far. Bloody, that's really pushing it.
In which case, it makes you wonder why it hasn't happened then.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, there's nothing beyond FIFA. They know no shame, do they? You know, maybe in 31, especially if Saudi gets the 2030 World Cup. They could make a double header and then do 31.
Well, of course, you know, if it was in the Middle East, though, it would be better times for us. Because let's face it, getting up in the middle of the night to watch football, I'm getting too old for this.
Yeah, I'm taking the challenge on.
Yeah?
I'm taking the challenge on. I'm going to try and watch every game. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But yeah. No, I am definitely going to be there for Nigeria v Canada at 3:30 on Friday. I'll be there. I won't be scheduling my tweets. This is a really absorbing encounter. No, I won't be doing that at all.
2 a.m. for USA Vietnam.
Well, I mean, in fairness, that's Friday night. So, you know, I mean, Friday night. Yeah, well, I mean, what? Nothing says Friday night better than USA v Vietnam on the telly. I mean, come on. Certainly at my age.
And nothing says 6 a.m. Sunday morning like Sweden versus South Africa.
Get in, mate. Yeah. Well, I mean, in fact, the way of looking at it is that once we get past the group stage, the schedule kind of calms down a little bit and it's sort of like more your kind of 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock, which is going to be a little bit more like it. But yeah, you know, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Well, it might not be fun. It depends whether I stay awake through it. But you know, I'm going to do my best.
Well, at least we have BBC and ITV showing it, and we don't have to put up with the FIFA feed anyway, because that would be pretty grim, wouldn't it?
Fortunately, they didn't come to an arrangement at all. The European Broadcasting Union bailed them out and bought the rights for Europe. And then, obviously, as members of the EBU, ITV and BBC get access to the event, so... That's how it worked. So this problem may well arise itself in 4 years' time. But part of the problem for the broadcasters is the time zones. They were like, well, there's lots of problems. One of it was like, normally the rights for the Men's and Women's World Cup are coupled together and FIFA uncoupled them. And then they wanted quite a lot of money. And the broadcasters were like, well, we don't really have that money, which of course is ultimately untrue. But they just didn't budget for that kind of money, you know. So... Then there was this ruddy sort of like interesting sort of like PR war that was going on certainly in the UK media. In fairness, you know, the broadcasters felt really strongly about it and didn't back down.
Yeah.
They didn't cave at all. It was going to take a third party to come in and do that. And I mean, one option was it maybe one of the sponsors might go, well, look, we'll pay the rights, okay, just so that this can get on the telly. But I think I wouldn't be at all surprised if the broadcast, because, you know, it's FIFA and like people don't like dealing with FIFA. They don't have a great track record of being nice to people. And so when they're in the ideas of the broadcaster, they're having this imposed upon them, you know, and they think they're being overcharged for something, then it's going to get their backs up. It's all very juvenile, but it was how it went down. Unfortunately, the EBU have come to our rescue, so we get to watch this tournament. But hopefully all of these issues will have been resolved in 4 years' time, wherever it may be. I'm sure that'll be the case.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were feeling a bit that BBC and ITV didn't value the tournament. And there may be a hint of truth in that, but I think it was more down to FIFA being arses than anything else.
Well, it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
It's definitely a bit of both.
Yeah.
There's an element of the broadcasters like saying, there will be literally no one watching some of these games.
Yeah.
There will be literally no one watching some of these games. And yet we have to pay for them and pay quite a lot of money for them when we used to pay effectively nothing for them.
Yeah.
And that's pretty hard-headed. It's not very enlightened. It's counter to the narrative that we're trying to build in women's football. And it's not a nice thing to say. It's a pretty ugly thing to say. But that's basically their position. But on the other hand, it's like FIFA are like, well, they're FIFA.
Yeah,
we just don't like them and we don't like dealing with them. Don't be under any illusions. I mean, like FIFA saying, oh, it's for the development of the women's game. It's important. It's like, come on, you're FIFA. Where do you think that money's going to go? Anyway,
Yeah.
It's sorted now.
BBC and ITV, well, they do kind of have a point. When they buy the rights for World Cups, they know they don't have to commission any programmes for about a month because the schedule is just full. And those evening schedules are very expensive to fill. Daytime schedules, schedules below midday, what are you knocking off? Homes Under the Hammer. Sorry,
yeah,
Dion.
Totally.
Dirt,
but it is unseemly,
TV.
Though.
It is unseemly.
And unfair,
yes.
on the women's game in, yeah. in general, and unfair on women's football fans as well.
Yeah.
So it is unseemly and wrong.
Yeah.
It's pleasing that it's been resolved. And thanks to the EBU, it should be said.
But again, this is why the Women's World Cup went to Australia, because they wouldn't be putting a Men's World Cup on in Australia because advertisers wouldn't want it.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's all rubbish, mate.
It's all terribly tawdry.
It's tawdry.
That's the word. That's the word. So, yeah, listeners, that was our very, very positive and uplifting preview for the upcoming Women's World Cup. And I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, Terry. Thanks for bringing it down.
Yeah, sorry, man. Tell you what, let's end on a high. Come on. Prediction. Who's going to win the World Cup?
Sweden.
See, now we didn't talk about Sweden at all during our preview, did we? Or barely spoke about it.
Yeah. USA are going to be knocked out by Spain.
Oh, that's a take.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that take.
Yeah.
I think Spain could be serious dark horses because they've had some serious problems with their coach. But those problems appear to have been resolved. So everyone's kind of thinking, well, Spain probably now not quite ready. But they've got better with every tournament, Spain.
Yeah.
I like Sweden. I think Sweden have got an excellent chance. I'm going for Germany if it's not US. But Sweden are a strong, not to be taken lightly.
Mm. I think France will do well. I think Herve's going to turn up and say,
yep.
I can do World Cups.
I'm so happy Herve Renard is the coach of France. I'm so happy because, you know, inevitably it will lead to him eventually becoming the men's team's coach. And that is just going to be the sweet spot. But yeah, because he's kind of, I think it needs an outsider, because I've looked for reading between the lines about what was been going on, you know, in the French camp, is that they had issues with their coach and then maybe getting, so say, like, why don't we just get someone else in? And so we'll find out. We don't know. But the feeling is that a lot of the dressing room politics issues and that have been resolved. And I think a united French team is going to be really, really tough to beat.
Yeah,
so
certainly.
Very, very strong sentiment towards France.
Yeah.
There's so many good teams. It's going to be great.
It is
going to be great. And we don't know.
So many good teams. I just can't wait for them to start actually playing now.
Yes.
So
yeah. Bundesliga 2 season starts in a week or so.
Well, we're lucky.
Ridiculous.
We're on Monday night now. So only three more sleeps until, well, the first rest day, I suppose, now, isn't it?
I suppose it is. Yeah.
Yeah, just be getting a big job lot of Pro Plus in, I guess.
Yeah, or no dose to use the Australian equivalent.
Yeah, we're going to be back in 2 weeks' time for the start of the season, the start of the regular club season, which will also be at the same time as the World Cup is still in full swing. So we'll be back for the knockout stages and see how our predictions have panned out. I'm sure we'll be spending half of that saying, yeah, well, just as we predicted, all these things have transpired. And not eating our words out of a huge, massive word bowl. That's in 2 weeks' time. So from now, for me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry Fellon, enjoy the World Cup and see you soon.
See you soon.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.